If we don't have boundaries, then it can be very confusing for other people to respect us, as boundaries are a form of self-respect and they can create mutual respect simultaneously.
So we're setting the tone and the standard of what we're willing or not willing to accept when it comes to our relationship dynamics.
This is episode number 604. We're talking today to Jan and Jillian Juhas, and we're going to be speaking about how to set clear boundaries in dating and relationships. And this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and I'm so excited to get into it in just a moment. But before I do, I want to welcome you back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you on your journey to lasting love, I have written two books. The first one actually is a lot about boundaries. It's called Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And I wrote this book because I really needed this book. If you have ever played small to make other people comfortable, or stayed quiet when you had something to say, or stayed in a bad relationship or job too long, this book is for you. And my second book is called Choice Points in Dating. This book I wrote to empower people to make healthier choices in every aspect of dating. It's really a guidebook to everything from mindset to how to get online, how to choose a mate, how to know when to stay, when to go, and how to go on your last first date. Both books are available on Amazon for Kindle or paperback, and Choice Points is also available now as an audiobook. This week's tip on becoming a woman of value is step 11, which is don't be a people pleaser, which is so much about boundaries. And if you have maybe grown up in a family where you were a people pleaser because it was a great way to fit in, or you're still doing it outside in the world in your relationships, you are compromising yourself. You are compromising who you are. And so my challenge to you this week is that when you have a tendency to have that auto yes, and yes, I'll do that for you, and yes, whatever you say, just take a pause and really stop and think, what do I want? And I'm sure we will talk more about that in today's podcast. But before I bring on our guests, one more thing, which is my Facebook group is a fantastic place. If you are over 40 and you are looking for a positive, supportive place, which is very rare in the Facebook group world. And so join us at Your Last First Date. And this is for women only. All right, we're going to talk to Jan and Jillian Juhas. They are identical twins and they are relationship and boundary experts. They have a background in psychotherapy and family mediation, and they are committed to resolving relationship challenges in every single part of life, whether it's at home or at work. And they are also the co-authors of a brand new book. It's called Boundary Badass. And it's designed to empower readers to voice their value, fulfill their emotional needs, and cultivate valuable connections through the mastery of boundary setting. Welcome to the podcast, to Jan and Jillian.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Why are boundaries so important to the two of you? Because we all have our own little story of all of a sudden we wake up one day and become, oh my God, I need boundaries. I'm curious what your story is.
So we grew up in a rural small farm town of 900 people and moved to a metropolitan city of 3 million. And that was a huge culture shock for us going through that experience. And we quickly learned, even though we had these strong family values, we were letting people into our lives that didn't have alignment in terms of the values. And so we were kind of met with these unhealthy or frustrating situations where it was challenging us to get our needs met.
I mean, our story is very similar, obviously being twins and both moving, having that culture shock of moving to a big city. I think also too, in terms of business, you know, a lot of times people think that even if you're serving them, they can sort of take advantage or try to push the boundaries in terms of like business contracts. So I think that was also another big lesson for us in our first professional endeavor. business.
Yeah, that's where we really honed in on using our boundary formula that we came up with and operating from a place of value rather than emotion. And so when we weren't getting our emotional needs met from an emotion-based perspective in our personal relationships, once we discovered how to operate from our values in business, we took that formula and transitioned it into every aspect of our personal and professional lives.
Yeah, those are really important life lessons. I think so many people have very fuzzy boundaries when it comes to both their interpersonal relationships and in business. And the more you know about what you need and what needs you have, the more you can start to set some boundaries around it. I've been working with a woman in business for probably about 14 years, sort of as a business consultant more than a coach. And she had such weak boundaries when we started. Her contracts were lacking so much, and she did not have any idea who her ideal client was. She didn't know how to have conversations up front about what she will and won't do and what they needed from her to know if there was an alignment before they even began working together. And every time something happens, when one really difficult client will sneak into the picture, she has to modify something in her business to accommodate for that in the future. And there's also the nipping in the bud piece of once you have your boundaries, you've got to set them and keep them. And a lot of people don't enforce them. What happens that causes people to maybe say, oh, I have clear boundaries, but then when push comes to shove, they're like, oh, it's really hard. I said it and they didn't do it. So it's not even worth bringing up again. What would you say to that?
I think a lot of times people are fearful to speak up because they're, you know, either they were taught in the home to either just stay silent or they are taught to avoid conflict, and they, you know, model that behavior that they were seen within the family home. And so now when it comes to really voicing their value, if they don't receive a positive response the first time, that sort of can create a trauma response or fearful reaction where, you know, I've already addressed this once and they didn't listen. So why bring it up again? But at the same time, sometimes we need to renegotiate boundaries if they're not being mutually respected within the relationship, because that means the relationship needs to grow and things need to be talked about.
And I think a lot of time when someone, there's a big misconception out there about setting boundaries and using a me mindset versus a we mindset. So a lot of times people will say, well, this is my boundary, so you have to meet it or else this is the consequence of what's going to happen. And a lot of times people aren't taking in consideration two perspectives within that dynamic. So each person has a very different belief system. And so when you have those two potentially opposing belief systems, we have to find that common ground within the relationship, which is based on the shared value, in order for each partner to have a voice in the relationship boundary.
Yeah, really important. Let's back up for a second and talk about what are boundaries, in your opinion, and why are they so important when people are dating?
So I think boundaries are really important because we're trying to establish synergy, mutual alignment. We're trying to understand each other better. But if we don't have boundaries, then it can be very confusing for other people to respect us, as boundaries are a form of self-respect and they can create mutual respect simultaneously.
So we're setting the tone and the standard of what we're willing or not willing to accept when it comes to our relationship dynamics. And based on our values, those meet our emotional needs on a deeper level for fulfillment within our connection.
Can you give some examples of what that might look like in the dating world?
Let's say you value communication and you recently met this person and you've been on a few dates, but then all of a sudden you start to notice their communication sort of either become like they pull back a little bit or they're not being as attentive, but communication is really important to you. So that's where you're going to want to set a boundary around the value of communication, because that's how you're going to figure out, can this person meet my emotional need around value of communication, knowing that that's something that you need in order to feel connected or be able to feel like that relationship can be going to thrive long term.
This is a big one. And I think people expect people to read their minds and they can't, because we all have different communication needs. And someone I dated recently had texted a lot in the beginning, not a lot, but he texted when he was trying to set up dates and trying to get to know me. And then he would just kind of disappear for a long time, like a week at a time, and then just show up again and say, "You doing anything Saturday night?" And it came to a head for me. Well, first of all, I really value communication. So the first time it happened, I addressed it by saying, first, I'm just trying to get to know you and to understand your communication style, because I've never dated anybody who took that long to communicate with me, and communication is important to me. And so he said, "Yeah, this is just me. I don't text anyone. I'm terrible at texting. People are really pissed off at me. They have all kinds of names for me." And I said, "Well, I don't have any yet, but the jury's out." And it got worse and worse, to the point where I had offered to come up and take a walk with him in the middle of the day. He completely ignored that text. And that night we got on the phone and I said, "Look, this was a time-bound thing. And all I expect is just a yes or no, or thank you for offering." And so I made a request, you know, in the future, mm-hmm. if something is time-bound, would you be willing to respond in the right time, in the time frame? And he said, "Yes, I will." And then shortly after, I ended the relationship because it really wasn't working for me on many levels. But the conversation being, "This is important to me. I'm wondering what's going on for you." And just that curiosity piece is so important.
Yes, it is. Because we really need to, it's not that we're not wanting to demand or tell the person what to do, but we're wanting to understand their perspective. And for example, he let you know that he's not great at texting, but in that moment, if you value texting or you value small touches in terms of communication here and there, whether it's once a day or every other day, whatever that rhythm looks like within the dynamic in terms of trying to get to know somebody, he has to be willing to compromise and be more attentive and find that middle ground between your guys' communication styles if we're going to keep evolving this connection. But if he's not willing to put in the effort now with just basic communication, yeah, it's probably a telltale sign that he's not willing to really put the effort in to make a relationship work long term.
And I think too, setting boundaries early on, you really learn people's true colors, whether or not it's worth pursuing that connection or relationship and where it's going to go. Or, you know, if you're already getting these certain vibes by setting healthy boundaries in the beginning and they're not sort of, you know, showing integrity around them or trying to work with you, it's probably not going to be worth it, because those immediate interactions tell you a lot about a person and the direction the connection could go.
Yes, they do tell you a lot. And a lot of people are reluctant to set boundaries early on. They think it's too soon and it's pushy. And so give us some other examples. We talked about texting, communication, phone calls, whatever that is. What are some other examples that you've seen that are early boundaries that are important to set?
So I would say meeting in a public space when it comes to dating. If you don't know this person and you've met them like online, so you want to take safety precautions and maybe wait till you get to know that person after a few dates before you would let them know what your home address is. So this is just kind of a safety measure. Also, never go to somebody's house for a first date. Say they offer to cook dinner, that you're putting your life in the hands of somebody you don't know, because we haven't built any sort of trust or connection with this person. And so our safety becomes really important, I think, in the initial stages of dating.
I think too, having sexual boundaries is really important, because nowadays people just think that they can pursue a connection and try to hook up with someone without actually building a genuine connection. So, you know, trying to wait until it's the right moment for both people versus feeling like you're pressured to engage in sexual activity when you're not ready or you haven't even established a commitment yet with this person.
I've seen so much of this in the dating world where somebody will say, "Why don't you just come over? We'll, you know, go come to my place after we have drinks." And you may feel a connection. You may feel like, "Wow, this is amazing." And you still don't know that person. And there are so many people who show up all shiny and wonderful and charming, and they're really not underneath. And it takes time and boundaries to get to know someone and how mm-hmm. they respond to your boundary, right? Like if I remember one time I said to somebody before I met him, "I'm an on-time person. I'm just curious whether you'll be on time." And he said, I'm not usually on time, but I will make an effort to be on time for you. And that was a nice response, you know, just who knows what that means in the long run, but at least I'm saying, you know, I'm going to show up on time. And I'm not going to wait a half an hour for you to show up because that does not work for me. That's something else that a lot of people do, the time thing. Like people say, I waited for him for a half an hour and he never, you know, he showed up late and he didn't even apologize. Well, that's a place to set a boundary for yourself. Like, how long am I going to wait? So let's talk about some different types of boundaries, not just in dating, but in all relationships.
Yeah, so there can be lots of relationships, or boundaries within different dynamics of our lives, whether it's professional, with family members, with colleagues at work, with digital boundaries in regards to how much you're spending on your computer, on your phone on a day-to-day basis.
Financial boundaries are really important as well, especially you want to know when you are dating someone if how they spend their money. Eventually, when you get to that topic, obviously it's not the initial phase, but that could become, you know, 3 months down the road, you want to know, because obviously money's a huge predictor whether people stay married or get a divorce. So I think, you know, finances is such a, there's so much emotion tied around that, and it can often lead to discord or disconnects.
I think we also have personal boundaries with ourselves in terms of meeting our own needs, because the relationship with ourselves is also a big predictor of the fulfillment of the relationships we have with other people as well. There's also emotional boundaries. So a lot of times people might dump all their stuff onto us, and that can be overwhelming for someone to feel like we have to like hear somebody's, you know, all their, everything they've gone through in that day in terms of frustrations or whatnot. And that can be, we might not have the capacity at that point to take that on. And we need to let that person know that, I'm sorry, you're going through this. Now is not a good time for me to talk about it. Can we find another time later on?
These are all really important boundaries. So there are so many boundaries that we have to know for ourselves, what works for us, what doesn't work for us, and why, because sometimes they're random and not really backed up by our values. And sometimes they're not. But how people spend their time, how they spend time on devices. I remember when I had younger children, and especially a daughter in high school who would always be on her phone. This was right when texting became like really important to high schoolers. And I don't think I even had a texting plan, because in those days you had to pay extra for texting. And so, you know, when I started dating after my divorce, I didn't have a text plan, and men would text me and I'd be like, I've got to pay for all these words that I send back. How dare they just assume that I have a texting plan? But stating my preferences even back then, saying I'd rather talk on the phone than text. With my daughter, I wanted to have dinner with her and have her get off her device and have dinner with me. And she would say yes. And then she'd grab dinner, lock herself in her room and run away. And that was not okay. So, but the emotional boundaries of how people dump their stuff, that's such a horrible thing that happens on dates. It's, I tell women all the time that a lot of men don't have a space to discuss these things. And women do. Women talk about their emotions with other women and are much more likely to have a place to be able to work things out. A lot of times a man will see a woman who's willing to listen, and then it's like they open the floodgates and stuff just comes pouring out. And without boundaries, it's really difficult to be on that date. It's difficult to tolerate that. Do you have any tips for somebody on a date who is the recipient of somebody's baggage or frustrations? What would you recommend?
Well, first off, I would say this might be one of those like red flags if somebody's coming to a date and just dumping all of their drama that they're going through onto you. It doesn't really set a positive tone for the dynamic, and they're not really getting to know you. Instead, they're just using you as a sounding board. And when it comes to dating, we actually want to leave a little bit of mystery in order to keep that intrigue there. And we want to start with our best foot forward. So if somebody's dumping all of their drama or everything that's going on in their life onto you, this person might have, it might be a sign that they lack emotional regulation. They don't really have any self-love or self-care techniques that they do in their life to cope with everything that's going on, which means their needs are always going to be the priority within the dynamic, and they're not really wanting to get to know you to see how you guys can come together as a, in terms of that relationship.
And I think too, you can always say, you know, thank you for sharing, but how about we find a topic we both can discuss where we can relate to one another? So you're redirecting them by using a discovery question, which is an open-ended question, to help them see that, you know, you appreciate what they're sharing, but at the same time, you want to find a way to connect with them versus just listening, where both people can have a ping pong effect of communication back and forth.
Yeah, I love redirecting. It's one of my favorite things to do. I think that a lot of people don't even have the awareness that they're stuck in this loop. And you can find out a lot by interrupting somebody, whether they get really angry. Some people have walked out of a date because the woman interrupted his long barrage of frustrations or talking about his ex for half an hour or whatever it is. It's just in an inappropriate conversation for a first date, certainly. And then others have said, thank you. I didn't realize I was really nervous and I didn't realize I was talking so much. I'm really sorry. I had a guy once do this where he was talking nonstop about himself. He had the self-realization that he was talking too much. And he said, tell me about you. And as soon as I started talking, he went right back, oh, me too, and went back to the conversation. And I was done at that point.
So that's someone who's seeking validation rather than connection within the dynamic.
That's a good distinction. He was all about name dropping and just showing me how great he was. And I was so disinterested in that connection because it wasn't a connection. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer. Let's talk about the difference between boundaries and ultimatums. We talked a little bit about that up front, but there is a big difference, and I'd love to hear what you have to say.
So with boundaries, it's all about coming from a we mindset and trying to open up the conversation to bridge the gap between our differences or disconnects so we can work collaboratively together and find that middle ground of compromise so that way the relationship can actually grow, where ultimatums can actually impose a communication breakdown or block connection because we're actually not allowing ourselves to open and negotiate. And so sometimes we set an ultimatum, it can feel very threatening or accusatory or confrontational, which the recipient or respondent is going to feel like there's someone's attacking my character or attacking me versus when you're trying to address the behavior, which we do when we're setting a healthy boundary.
I also think with ultimatums, people will say, if you don't do X, then I'm going to do Y. So those are conditional terms. And then that's a demand. The other person that's being projected onto the relationship, the other person's going to feel like they're being controlled or that's like a threat. And more than likely, most people don't respond well to demands or threats that are being placed on them, which is why a lot of people will, if they set an ultimatum, thinking that it's a boundary, it'll fail.
Yeah. You ever watch a show Ultimatum on, I think it was on Netflix?
I watched a few clips of it. Yes.
Really interesting concept that people who were stuck in these relationships where they wanted to move forward and get married and the other one was not sure, that if they gave them an ultimatum and also dated another person, whether this was going to bring them closer. And there's so many problems with this. I mean, like we don't have all day to talk about it, but it's an interesting thing. And I think that so many times people think that a boundary is a wall that we put up between us. And it is more of the ultimatum that they're thinking about. And I like to think of boundaries as one of those stanchions, you know, those things that we put up at a theater that have like a little clip that we can open and close, but they're soft velvet, you know, they're kind of like pink velvet, red velvet. And we are deciding who to let in and out, what to let in and out of our lives, and what works and doesn't work. And I like to use the sentence stem, like if somebody asks me to do something like meet for a hike for a first date, and I don't know you and I'm not gonna go in the woods alone with you, I will say something like, you know, that doesn't work for me for a first date. What works better is meeting in a public space, like going for a drink or coffee or ice cream. Does that work for you? So it's more of a conversation. Do you have any sentence stems or things that people can have like in their back pocket to use when somebody makes a request that doesn't work for them in dating?
So yeah, for example, when it comes to like, for example, someone asking for going on a hike in the woods, I agree. That's not a safe first date. So it might seem like you would say like, that sounds like a really good idea. How about we save that for once we've known each other a little bit longer? What are your thoughts about us grabbing ice cream or coffee? So you're not putting them down for their idea if it's something of interest to you in the future, but you're letting them know what you're comfortable with today when it comes to that first date.
Mm, that's a good one. I once had somebody ask me to opera box seats for a first date to drive an hour into Manhattan and meet him for the first time, like driving with him, number one, no. Number two, going to opera, I don't like opera. Number three, sitting in a box seat with him for hours and then driving home. And I did say something like, that sounds like a nice third or fourth date, you know, it's like, but we don't really know each other. And at this point, you know, I'd love to just grab a coffee. So it's, yeah, I think the gentle softness of don't put the person down, don't criticize them. There's a lot of that in the dating world where a man will say, well, I'd love to take you to this lovely Italian restaurant. And she goes, no, I hate Italian. And it's like, yeah. Okay, and then what?
So well, men are very sensitive to rejection. Yeah. So you might want to say, unfortunately, you know, maybe I have a gluten allergy. I can't eat pasta, even though most restaurants have some other sort of
entree.
Yeah, exactly. But so I would, if you're telling him no constantly, he's going to get the impression that you don't like him or you don't want to go on dates with him. And so he's going to stop. He'll just give up at that point in time. So if you really like someone, you need to figure out how to navigate those intricacies that you're not shattering his confidence to want to pursue you.
Yeah, I think all people are sensitive, but I think that especially if a man is taking initiative and he's the one mm-hmm. doing the planning, which women often say we love a man who plans, but then he plans and you don't like his plan. And so you totally emasculate him by saying, no, that's a horrible plan. And then he has no idea what you really want because you haven't given him that on the other mm-hmm. end. You mentioned a little earlier about renegotiating boundaries as relationships grow. So talk a little bit more about that.
So I think at some point in the relationship, you know, you might set something early on in the dating phase. And then once you become committed, you might realize the relationship has outgrown the boundary or your needs are starting to develop and evolve as that attachment becomes much more secure between the two of you. So instead of like, let's go back to communication, because I feel like it's just such a topic that everybody always wants more communication, you know, especially being females, or if someone's sending way too many messages and, you know, throughout the workday, they want to find that balance. So I think too, as we evolve, so we might say, you know, let's just touch base once a day in the evening. And that's what you established in the beginning. But then now you've developed this like stronger feelings for this person. You might want to hear from them in the morning or maybe on your lunch break and in the evening. So you might want that communication to actually increase now that you're trying to get to know them on a deeper level and you're actually wanting that relationship to evolve. And so that's where you would probably want to renegotiate what the communication looks like. But let's say he's very busy during the workday and he can't do that. So he might say, how about I just touch base with you in between, you know, 11 and 1 versus always, let's say, calling you at noon or something like that. But he might just touch base and shoot you a quick message just to let you know I'm thinking of you. But that's a way of like trying to compromise. It may not be exactly on your lunch break, but at least he's trying to find the time between meetings and making the effort. So that's where communication might, you know, those boundaries might need to be renegotiated as the relationship was to evolve.
And I'm sure that there are so many other areas, and I'm thinking even sexually, that a lot of times you may start out a little bit more vanilla, and as the relationship evolves, you may want to explore more because there's more trust and maybe things have become a little complacent in the bedroom. And so you're renegotiating certain things. Sometimes people open relationships after a long time, but they have to have a discussion about that and see if it works for both people.
Mm-hmm. I think family boundaries is another big one that probably happens, especially once you start attending each other's family's festivities, events, or celebrations during the holidays. Sometimes family members can start to impose on couples' relationships or try to alter the way that they're operating or just basically put their two cents in. Obviously, if you have your significant other's parents or their siblings try to impose, that can get really sticky and tough. And that's where family boundaries, especially around holidays or get-togethers, can be really important as well, which you would want to definitely establish.
Yeah, family boundaries are so important. I'm glad you brought that up. I had major issues around that when I was married because my ex-husband was so devoted to his parents that it was often supersede his relationship with me. They were always the priority. And I was really felt really disrespected. I felt that that should not be the priority. And I myself had dealt with this with my own family where I did choose my partner over my parents. My father was somebody who used to call constantly to complain, especially when my parents were getting divorced around the same time as I was getting married. And that was the first memory I have of setting a very clear boundary, because my dad would call me and just tell me how awful my mom was. And I said, you know, this is really an inappropriate conversation to have with me. I'm not comfortable and I'm going to hang up if you keep doing it, because I really could not listen to it anymore. And he would get so angry at me for cutting him off, for not letting him do what he always did. And I set that boundary, and he eventually learned who I was and what I would and would not tolerate, because there was such a lack of boundaries in the family I grew up in, and also in my marriage, which is why I ended up studying boundaries and practicing boundaries. But yeah, I mean, do you both have any examples from like family kinds of things that you needed to set boundaries around?
So I think our parents always listened to us. So that's why when we had moved to a bigger city, it was very challenging for us to not feel heard or understood by other people, because our parents have always respected us and our needs. I feel like for the most part, growing up, we were always had a safe space to really voice what it is that we needed. Our parents are divorced and remarried, so I think we had to figure out those dynamics and how our step-parents fit into our lives, and that's where I think our boundaries started to play out in our family dynamics.
This can be challenging.
Mm-hmm. She said we always learned to express our feelings and they would be validated, but this is where I think too, where our method came into play and learning to use our family value sort of system, and starting really to understand that like people can understand values much easier, as emotions are often one-sided, but values can be universally understood. And so I think that's where we had to learn to shift our communication, but because what we knew growing up was no longer working as we evolved into our adult life.
It's really interesting, and I think important for people to hear that you can grow up in a home where you do feel validated and still struggle with boundaries. And I think it's rare for people to grow up in a home where people feel seen and heard and validated. But it's almost like, you know, body image issues. People think thin people don't have body image issues. Mm-hmm. Everybody has has some degree of issue with most things. And just because you grew up in a healthy family doesn't mean that you don't struggle in the outside world. And so I think it's good that you shared your perspective coming from that family and being surprised that the rest of the world didn't function this way.
Being twins growing up, we've always had that we mindset because we've always kind of had to consider, our parents taught us to consider each other, I guess, when making major decisions that would impact the other person. And so we were used to having the we mindset when it comes to being, you know, entrepreneurs and business together, sisters, making plans with friends or whatever. We never left the other person out. And so when we encountered a lot of people that were, you know, not from a twin type relationship, you know, just single children, or they did have siblings, but they were used to operating based on their needs solely. I think that was also a harder shift for us because we weren't used to that either.
Yeah, it's very interesting. My daughter has three small children who are going to be 10, 7, and 4. Mm-hmm. And they get along beautifully, like better than my kids ever got along. And my daughter's very intentional about how she taught them conflict resolution, how she taught them to speak about their feelings and needs, how to work out a lot of the emotional issues so that they can regulate their emotions. And I love watching it because it's just like they'll all hold hands and play together. And the 10-year-old is becoming a little bit bigger now, like she's going to definitely be a teenager in a few years, and she's already acting like one. And mm-hmm. so it's always surprising to me that she still includes them and she still wants to play and create games together. And I think it's such an important thing for people to keep in mind as they're raising families, that the playground of our children is really a blueprint for how they learn conflict resolution and how they learn to set boundaries in life and to say yes or no. You know, these are such important years and such an important place to practice all these skills that we use as adults.
It is true. The home is really vital in terms of helping us learn coping skills, conflict resolution. Unfortunately, we don't learn it in the school system anywhere in terms of how to really communicate. And so I think a lot of people take what they've learned in the home, such as attachment style, which can impact our communication style. And then our attachment style with one of our parents or caregivers gets translated into usually our adult romantic relationships, and whether we, you know, have more of a secure style or anxious style or more avoidant. So usually those dynamics in the home really do impact us later on in life. And our personalities are usually developed by age 7. So.
Yep, totally. I mean, one of the things I do with clients when they start working with me is take an attachment quiz, mm-hmm. because your attachment style is so important and determines so many of the patterns that we see in dating and relationships. Let's talk about respect. And when somebody pushes against a boundary, you know, like you set the boundary for communication and they continue, let's say, to text after you've said, I really want to get on a call. What do you recommend people do when someone doesn't respect a boundary?
So I think in those moments, that's when you need to say, you know, can you help me use a discovery question? Can you help me understand how come we can't jump on a call versus text, and explore and open up that conversation to understand how come they're not respecting the agreed upon boundary of having a phone call in the evening, let's say, versus just shooting a text? Like, is there a reason? How come they're, you know, maybe they're exhausted from the workday and they just don't have the energy to communicate? And that's when you might say, okay, that's okay. Like, I respect you had a long day. How about we just jump on the call tomorrow? But you don't want to get necessarily in that texting phase or that texting communication style if that's not what feels good to you and you would rather jump on a phone call. So then it may be better to say, hey, let's jump on a call tomorrow. That way you're still setting the tone that you value a phone call versus a text message conversation in the evening.
Yeah, I like that, the sentence that you used, because it's curious. It's not accusatory. It's mm-hmm. not a blame, shame kind of way to bring up the topic, which when people keep things in for too long, it often comes out that way. How dare you? Or I set a boundary and you disrespected me. We're out, we're done, you know, and a lot of people just walk away without even talking about it. So getting curious, finding out what's going on for them. Just like when I had that issue with the guy not answering my text, I'm just curious to know you better first before I say like, what the hell? And nobody's ever done this before. I don't understand people who wait that long for texting. And yeah, I think if people could bring things up faster, that's a big part too, and not hold it in. Mm-hmm. And let people know what your bottom line is. Now, let's say it's a really big boundary. Like, I told you I wasn't going to have sex with you until this, this, and this happened. And then they just push for sex. What would you say then?
I think there's a disconnect in the relationship at that point, because if you're letting them know what you're comfortable with and they're still not willing to listen to you, then you need to evaluate how this relationship fits into your life. If a person is not willing to respect your comfortability or your needs in terms of waiting to have sex, then you need to decide if this is the right person for you. And Sometimes we have to redefine relationships if the person is no longer willing to respect us.
Yeah, respect is so key. And we have to respect ourselves first in order to know how we want to be respected.
Yeah, and I think in those moments too, it's really important to take ownership in what it is that you value or what your standards may be, because you don't necessarily want to attack his character or whatever his behavior is doing, but you can just say this, you know, this is uncomfortable and, you know, I value mutual respect. How can we talk about this? Or do we need to go our separate ways? Because in those moments, like, you're speaking your truth from a place of an I statement and you're still being heart-centered, but you're also not getting, you know, controlling or controversial, because we don't want that person to try to flip it back on us. So we want to take ownership of what it is that we need.
And It could be that the person who's seeking sex is that they could be seeking validation rather than connection. So if they're feeling rejected, then we need to figure out maybe even other ways of how we can help them feel connected. But unless we uncover that and ask discovery questions to really understand where they're coming from, it could be challenging to get to the root. So we really need to try to assess the situation and think from a big picture perspective as well.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people will just say no to sexual advances without letting the other person know, I'm attracted to you. I am interested. Mm-hmm. But here's what I need to develop trust, to feel that I know you better, to exchange STI results, whatever it is that's important to you, establishing your standards first, and then having a discussion about it. This is part of what makes us feel comfortable. I mean, I people will say, I want to explore this, this, and this. And then you get curious and ask more instead of making assumptions. And I think relationships would be so much better if we can have those kinds of discussions.
Yes. And you brought up a good point, validating that you are attracted to them, that you do want to have a sexual relationship with them. It's just, you're not quite ready for that. So we're letting them know, we're validating them. And I think a lot of people think if you validate someone that you're in agreement with what it is that they're requesting, but really we're just letting them know that we heard and understood their need, but how can we, you know, figure out what works for both of us in order before that need gets met and how we're going to go about meeting that need.
And a lot of people are on different timelines about a lot of things. It could be a proposal. It could be the words, I love you. So many things. And the way that you respond to that really matters. You know, somebody proposes before you're ready. I love you. I'm just not ready to make that commitment yet. You know, I need a little more time. Here's what I need. Here's why I need it. Just explaining those things helps to make the other person feel better about the fact that they just put themselves on the line and did this thing. And I mean, the words, I love you, become so weighty for people, and everybody's afraid to say it first. And then the other person might feel the necessity to say it back before they're ready. But let's get to the final question, which is, what are your final words of advice for anyone who wants to go on their last first date?
Allow yourself to take the time to get to know someone and don't rush the process. Because if you rush the process, it's going to be really hard to understand, can this person meet my emotional needs long-term based on my values? Because if I'm so emotionally engaged in the interaction and connection, and then I disconnect from my values, it could actually hinder the process. And then it won't be your last first date because you're going to end up with someone who's never going to be able to meet your needs. So if you take that time to trust the process and get to know someone, understand their values, understand what's important to them, to see if they can align with your values, I think that's going to be very key. So that way you can set yourself up for long-term success.
Right. And usually if we have three out of our top five values in alignment with another person, that can also give us a clue that this relationship has long-term potential. And you know if somebody's in alignment with their values based on their actions. So if you value trust or integrity and they always keep their word, then you know that more than likely you can build trust with this person over time.
Those are so important. And so many people jump in based on an emotional connection and a lot of fantasy and filling in the blanks. This mm-hmm. person, oh my God, we like the same music. This is not a value. This is an interest. And
exactly.
We often connect like, oh, we're just made in heaven and we're not really made in heaven. And so slow dating is something I totally advocate for. Like, know yourself, know your values, know what you need first. And take your time to discover whether somebody meets your needs, whether you meet their needs, and it becomes so much easier to walk away or to stay when you know those things.
Right. I think another big piece of advice is get rid of the checklist. Like someone who's like 6 foot or makes six figures, that person is not going to meet your emotional needs because they have these superficial attributes that you find attractive. So get rid of the checklist and throw it out the door.
Yeah. The bad checklist. You should have mm-hmm. a checklist of values and character and
exactly.
things that you need. But yeah, the 6 foot thing is so ridiculous. It's
well, I think And you don't want to base things on something that's like a physical thing, because all that stuff is going to change. Eventually their hair is going to potentially gray or fall out. They could lose their job and the money is going to disappear and you still have to like love this person. So I think if when you base it, you know, attraction on those types of physical features or, you know, things, like it can really be a disservice to what it is that you value in a relationship.
Yeah. And you used the word validation a bunch of times during this interview. And I think that that's an important piece here too, to look at, that we often choose a partner based on how they validate us. Somebody who's tall and good looking, has a good job, the CEO of the company, feels very validating to us and to how people see us. But what do we need is a very different story. And so
mm-hmm. yep.
focusing on the boundaries, focusing on values, being able to communicate clearly, calmly from the beginning will lead to healthier relationships. Tell our audience how they can find your book.
They can find our book at boundarybadass.com. And you can also sign up to win a free paperback copy as well as behind the scenes Q&A.
I really enjoyed this conversation. Boundaries are, as I said, one of my favorite topics. I think if more of us were better at boundaries, we would have healthier relationships in every aspect of our lives. So thank you for doing this really important work and writing this important book.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks everybody for listening today. If you love our show, please give us a high rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Share this with your friends. And as always, here's to your last first date. If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.